हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैतगराधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 88. Animal killing is prohibited. Every living being, of course, has to eat something. Jivo jivasya jivanam. But one should be taught what kind of food one should take. Therefore, the Upanishad instructs, tena tyaktena bhunjitaha. One should eat whatever is allotted for human beings. Ishopanishad Mantra 1. Krishna says in Gita 9.26, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati taraham bhaktyupahitam ashnami pratyatatmanaha. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. A devotee therefore does not eat anything that would require slaughterhouses for poor animals. Rather, devotees take prasad of Krishna, tena chaktena bunjitaha. Krishna recommends that one give him patram pushvam palam toyam, a leaf, flower, fruit, or water. Animal food is never recommended for human beings. Instead, a human being is recommended to take prasad, remnants of food left by Krishna. Yagya shishta shinas santo muchyante sarvakil vishahi. The Bhagavad Gita 3.13. One practices eating prasad, even if there is some little sinful activity involved, one becomes free from the results of sinful acts. So the essential point that's coming out here is that what's connected to Krishna, what Krishna recommends, what Krishna is interested in, that's actually then what's free from sin. That's actually the proper standard. Because otherwise, so much speculation can be there. But the point is what you can offer to Krishna, that's then what can be eaten. So since Krishna doesn't take, animal food, the killing of animals, he doesn't accept that. So therefore, then, that's not then what humans eat. So the whole point is it's all about what does God authorize? That's then what we do. It's not a matter of mental speculation. It's a matter of what God recommends and then applying that into our situation. The concept of speculation, that's a material concept. It's a matter of contemplating and seeing properly how that applies in our life. Right? Now, some may also take this, they accept the part about the animals, but then they'll say, oh, Krishna only wants a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, and that's all we'll give him, but we'll eat whatever we like. Okay, it's vegetarian or vegan, whatever it is that, turns us on. But we're just giving Krishna that because that's all he's asking for. But what's missed in here is that the humans eat what is the remnants of sacrifice, what has been offered to the Lord. Therefore, if all you're offering him is a fruit, a flower, a leaf, and water, then that's all you're going to be eating. So fine. You want to roll like that? That's great. But the point is what Krishna eats is what you eat. Right? So it's about Krishna, not about us. Right? We may have our own thing because, our own... Oh, in particular, there may be something that we've actually observed, we do better with this or that, or it may be just our attachments or whatever like this. But the point is that offering to Krishna, that's what purifies things. And then by eating Krishna prasad, then we get purified. There's no sin. Right? So if you offer everything that can be offered to Krishna and then eat that, one will be freed from sin. Right? But one also has to be careful that you're freed from material consciousness by seeing it in relationship to how to please Krishna. Is that something? Yes.
Can you say that there was a lot of talk about if it's prasadam or not prasadam, how do we know if Krishna has eaten or he didn't?
And what's the purpose of that?
No, the purpose is that prasadam has two aspects. One, he's freeing us from sin, but the second one, he's elevating us.
Yes.
So if we did the ritual just for the sake of the ritual, it might free us from sin, but it's not necessarily elevates our consciousness if we did it only for the sake of the ritual.
So why are we so confident that just because we did the activity that we're free from sin? I see. Okay. No, what I was asking, what's the purpose of having this kind of thought?
It's karma mitra bhakti.
Yeah, because the point is it basically, these are thoughts when we have nothing else to do and no other gossip to think about. You know, in other words, these kind of things, what do? They put us in anxiety. They put us in doubt. So therefore, if you're in anxiety and doubt, how well do you do your duties in sadhana and interact with others and all that? Right? So in other words, that taste for that kind of, oh no, what about this? What about that? Because you'll find generally they may be doing it here, but then something else comes up. There's a riot somewhere. Oh no, is that going to affect us? Can we do this? They'll do that on everything. So it's just a mentality that's not actually very useful in Krishna consciousness. It's that what your duties are that you do. Who's said to do them? Krishna. And so if you do them, whether they're ritualistic or not, why would you be doing that? Right? Unless you're from a smarta family where that's what you're going to do anyway as a gross materialist, there's a good chance you would not be doing that activity. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So therefore, the consideration that you're even doing it must have something to do with pleasing Krishna. So there's going to be some aspect of pleasing Krishna. Even if it's only a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the difference. But you understand is there's that one underlying thing that's still left there from in previous lifetimes being a smarta, is that I did the ritual, I get the result. Mm-hmm. That part's still left, because we're confident of that. You know what I'm saying? So that aspect. So we just have to see is that these kind of mentalities that put us in anxiety and doubt and these kind of things, these aren't very useful. Krishna says this is what you do, this is what we do. Does that make sense? So we don't have to worry that did Krishna accept it or not, how do you know and everything, you know. Then we can say, well, how do we know you offered it? You know, how do you know you're even here? How do you know that you're not, you know, Bhakta Jose's over there, you know, just an illusion because he ate too much halava and all that, so the indigestion, you created you. You know what I'm saying? You can just go on and on and on like this. You want to have doubts, you can have real fun. You know, that's what I say sci-fis are all about. You know? How do we know they're not a cyborg? You know, how do we know that you're not a spy? You know, what I'm saying? You just go on and on. If one wants that aspect of fearing, anxiety, doubt, these things, then there's tons of that.
But how you should deal with such people when they raise those questions?
Depends upon their digestion. you can either take the thing, no, because, you know, explain it, that this is the process, because which Krishna has recommended, it's given to us by Guru, so we're only following the process out of that the thing, so therefore it's pleasing to Krishna. Now, the more we add, so there's devotion that we're doing it. Now, whether we're remembering at the time or not is another, so that's one. So the point is that we're doing it because of that devotion, therefore, then you don't have to worry. It's pleasing to Krishna. Now you can make it more pleasing by being focused when you do make the offering and not worrying about is Krishna accepting the offering, you know, like that. So that's the whole thing. You take it and show the positive aspect or the real aspect, and then show them that you can improve it by taking it further. So that's that works very nicely. The other one is you can just basically point out, stop being mental and just get down to being, being real and being Krishna conscious. Whatever works. But I would say in the present times, I would tend to go with the first one. Because you have to have some character, some training, some everything to be able to function on the second. Because the first one, it's all about you. Though you're connecting to Krishna, the second one, it's definitely about Krishna and Guru and the reality of what has to be done. So you have to adjust yourself to see things according to the actual position. The other one is you're getting him to see the thing, but you're kind of going around the bush, like that. But most people like dancing around bushes. So so you just find what works. Narad Muni continued, while living, one may be proud of one's body, thinking oneself a very big man, minister, president, or even demigod. But whatever one may be, after death, this body will turn either into worms, into stool, or into ashes. If one kills poor animals to satisfy the temporary whims of this body, one does not know that he will suffer in his next birth, for such a sinful miscreant must go to hell and suffer the results of his actions. Footnote 33. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 8 through 10 to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 14, called Analysis of Unfavorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Pratikul Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the book. So, not following things according to what is given to us by Krishna, what is authorized. Right? In other words, what's our quota? That's not useful in Krishna consciousness. Right? So, accepting what is our quota, following according to our quota, applying it according to our quota, right? Then that's useful in Krishna consciousness. Because it's about, why would we be following a quota? Because it's what Krishna has given us, it's what pleases Krishna. Right? So that's the favorable part. What would be our other view of it? Because of our identifying with the body. So therefore this body can't do this, and okay, these are what the Shastra says, but I can't do those things, and this and that. And does that make sense? So the point is Shastra always gives the alternatives. And so then one, therefore, sticks to Shastra and follows the alternatives, rather than pick the most extreme and then say, I can't follow that, and then throw the whole thing out. It's a standard political thing. Just like if I make a statement, that could have some varieties to it and you don't appreciate it, then you will give, and then I'll say, well, what's wrong with it? What kind of example will you come up with? Right? The most extreme one you can think of. And the fun part, it's always the same extreme one that everybody thinks of. Right? But the point is we'll think of that, not something balanced, not something practical. We'll always take the most extreme, and I can't do that. Because we don't want to follow authority. But the point is following authority, following Krishna, that's actually how things work. Because that's all that's going on in the transcendental realm, is what is Krishna's pleasure? That's what's being followed. So, Srila Prabhupada comments, in this verse, the three words krimi, vid, bhasma are significant. After death, the body may become krimi, which means worms. For if the body is disposed of without cremation, it may be eaten by worms. Or else it may be eaten by animals like hogs and vultures and be turned into stool. Those who are more civilized burn the dead body, and thus it becomes ashes. Bhasma sangitam. Yet, although the body will be turned into worms, stool, or ashes, foolish persons, just to maintain it, commit many sinful activities. This is certainly regrettable. The human form of body is actually meant for jivasya tattva jigyasa, enlightenment and knowledge of spiritual values. Therefore, one must seek shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Tasmat gurum prapadyeta, one must approach a guru. Who is guru? Shabde pare cha nishnatam. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.21. A guru is one who has full transcendental knowledge. Unless one approaches a spiritual master, one remains in ignorance. Acharyavan Purusha Purusho Veda, Chandogya Upanishad 6.14.2. One has full knowledge about life when one is Acharyavan, controlled by the Acharya. Right? So here's the definition. Because we'll say, oh, one who has full transcendental knowledge. Where will we put our emphasis? Which word? Full. Right? So, does he have everything? He knows everything. He knows every last syllable of all the shastras and this and that. He can quote it while he's asleep and, you know, how you say it, being hanging upside down. You know, all these different things. If he can't do that, then he's not bona fide. So that's the point. But actually, it's on transcendental knowledge. And then where is that gained from? From his guru. So the point is, someone can teach transcendental knowledge if they've heard it from their guru. So the point is, what we're avoiding is individuals who haven't heard it from a bona fide guru, and therefore they make up their own idea. You know what I'm saying? So Prabhupada mentioned, we have so many commentators on Bhagavad Gita, and so then all these, they're just making it up. It's just whatever sounds good to them, whatever they think, whatever is according to their values. Right? So that's then what has to be given up. That's not what we mean by full knowledge. Because full means in connection with the Lord's internal potency. Because that's complete. We may just have a little bit of that knowledge. But having that little bit of knowledge, then because it comes in the parampara, it gives the effect. That's the point. You just need one holy name can destroy all the sins of the universe. Right? So it's not that you need volume, but we've been trained in volume. Right? As a good middle class consumer in society, what are we supposed to do? Consume. We're supposed to buy things in volume. Right? Like that. That's what we're supposed to do. You know, that's our, how you say, support of the nation. You know? So this is what has to happen. So we're used to volume. If there's more numbers, then it's better. Right? You know, somebody has, how you say, 5 million or 50 million followers on Facebook, they must be better. Even though their content is not necessarily very good. It's always volume. It's never quality. So here we see is that it's about the quality. So one is Acharyavan, right? Says Acharyavan Purusho Veda, one who's controlled by the Acharya. But when one is conducted by Rajagun and Tamagun, one does not care about anything. Right? So if one cares about the Acharya, cares about following the order of Guru and Krishna, that means Rajagun and Tamagun are less. Right? Does that make sense? And this is the other fun part of the volume formula, is that it's good if it has, huge volume. Right? If it has less volume, it's not good. Right? But on the inverse, you know, which is the other side of this particular, spectrum, is that if there's anything bad, it can't be good at all. Right? So if there's just one little fault, it's totally bad. And unless it has huge amounts of what I call good, you know, then it's good. Although, you understand? It's a weird formula. Extremely popular. You know? It's the, you know, the black and white formula, the all or nothing formula. You know? Is that, yeah. So the whole point is that if one is controlled by the Acharya, one's trying to live one's life according to the Acharya, that means, why? How can that happen? Because Rajagun and Tamagun have gone down. Therefore, that has to be appreciated. Okay? Now, if someone's going against that and preaching against that, then you can understand Rajagun and Tamagun are not reducing significantly. So, but when one is conducted, by Rajagun and Tamagun, one does not care about anything. Instead, one acts like an ordinary foolish animal, risking his life. Mrityu samsara vartmani. Bhagavad Gita 9.3. And therefore continuing to go through suffering after suffering. Nate vidhu svarta gatim hi vishnum. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.31. Such a foolish person does not know how to elevate himself in this body. Instead, he indulges in sinful activities and goes deeper and deeper into hellish life. Right? So that's the difference. One takes shelter of the bona fide spiritual master and the bona fide parampara. Then the whole process works very nicely. And if one doesn't, then due to ignorance, one will commit so much nonsense. Right? Narad Muni continued, while alive, does this body belong to its employer? To the self, to the father, the mother, or the mother's father? Does it belong to the person who takes it away by force, to the slave master who purchases it, or to the sons who burn it in the fire? Or, if the body is not burned, does it belong to the dogs that eat it? Among the many possible claimants, who is the rightful claimant? Yeah. Yeah. I can just see that, right? You know, the big lawsuit of the decade. You know, dead body against all these claimants, right? You know, like that. Not to ascertain this, but instead to maintain the body by sinful activities is not good. So, in other words, you should ascertain who does own the body. The body, this body, after all, is produced by the unmanifested nature, and again annihilated, merged into the natural elements. Therefore, it is the common property of everyone. Right? Because everyone's dealing with all the elements, the common elements. So, right? If it's out in the forest, does it belong to anybody? No. Yeah, if it's not, you know. But can anybody take from there? Yes. So that means technically your body belongs to everyone because it's just made out of, you know, the five Mahabhutas that are just common to everything. So everyone is dealing with the Mahabhuta. Do you understand? So it gets wild if you get into it. So that's why one starts to think, so what's the actual reality? Under the circumstance, who but a rascal claims this property as his own, and while maintaining it, commits such sinful activities as killing animals, just to satisfy his whims? Unless one is a rascal, one cannot commit such sinful activities. So the facts of, you know, who it belongs to is way more than our general consideration, just that it's, hey, it's mine, you know, but everybody else, you know, either gave it, maintains it, takes it away, controls it, like that. So, Srila Prabhupada comments. Atheists do not believe in the existence of the soul. Right? So if there's no soul, then why is it, who's this you that say it's mine? Because if you say, no, it's just the body, it's just the elements, it's the chemicals, but the chemicals are common, so how can you claim this is mine? Right? Like that, yeah. Nonetheless, unless one is very cruel, why should one kill animals unnecessarily? Even if you don't believe in the soul, why do you need to kill another body to take care of this body, since it's all just part of the natural elements anyway? The body is a manifestation of a combination of matter. In the beginning, it was nothing, but by the combination of matter, it's come into existence. Then again, when the combination is dismantled, the body will no longer exist. In the beginning it was nothing, and in the end it will be nothing. That's it. That's it. Huh? as it goes, nothing thou art, nothing thou shall become. Yeah.
But it can be argued that if there is nothing and it's still a bunch of chemicals, first of all, one can claim that this is the quota of my chemicals.
No, but who's my?
The one who sits inside the body.
No, but there's no soul, because the atheists don't believe in a soul.
Okay, then if there is no soul, what's the point? What's the problem of killing bunch of chemicals?
But what's the necessity? Because this chemicals can go on very nicely without it. So why make that extra endeavor and give trouble to others? Because the point is yes, but the point is if it's only chemicals, why do the chemicals have to enjoy? Are you worried about, you know, that sodium bicarbonate on your shelf enjoying itself?
No.
No. So then, you know, what's the difference between that box of chemicals and this bag of chemicals, other than one's in a box and one's in a bag? Yeah. So the whole point is if you break it down like that, then what's the need to even endeavor at all? Why not just sit at your house and, you know, become the perfect couch potato and just, you know, sit there until you merge with the couch? You know? Then you could say you're a real couch potato.
Perfection.
What's that dust on the couch? Oh, that's my husband. Really? How long has he been there? Oh, that was about, you know, 12 years ago. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is when you take it into these things, then you can take it beyond into the kind of intellectual absurdity, and then it kind of gets really weird. Why then should one commit sinful activities when it is manifested? It is not possible for anyone to do this unless he is rascal number one. So you have to have that envy and other things, and that sense of pride and other things that you feel is your position, your right. Nard Muni continued, atheistic fools and rascals who are very much proud of wealth fail to see things as they are. Therefore, returning them to poverty is the proper ointment for the eye, so that they may see things as they are. At least a poverty-stricken man can realize how painful poverty is, and therefore he will not want others to be in a painful condition like his own. Srila Prabhupada comments, even today, if a man who was formerly poverty-stricken gets money, he is inclined to utilize his money to perform many philanthropic activities, like opening schools for uneducated men and hospitals for the disease. Right? So generally, in general, but specifically whatever their kind of disturbance was or anxiety was due to their position, that's generally when they do get some facility, they generally open something for that. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, it's like if they were not offered education, when they get the thing, they'll open for education. If it was a matter of places to stay or food or clothes, they'll always think in these kind of philanthropic ways because they knew how difficult it was. They want to see that others, when they have facility, then they're taken care of, right? So that's appropriate. What's inappropriate is this thing where they become proud of their wealth and they can't see things properly. They just think that they're special and they can do anything they like because they have that wealth. Right? So then the natural thing is then that treatment will be poverty. And then by that poverty, then things will start to adjust. Okay, we already did that.
In this connection,
there is an instructive story called Punar Mushiko Bhava. Again, become a mouse. A mouse was very much harassed by a cat, and therefore the mouse approached a saintly person to request to become a cat. When the mouse became a cat, he was harassed by a dog, and then he became a dog. He was harassed by a tiger. Then when he became a dog, he was harassed by a tiger. But when he became a tiger, he stared at the saintly person. And when the saintly person asked him, "What do you want?" the tiger said, "I want to eat you." Then the saintly person cursed him, saying, "May you again become a mouse." A similar thing is going on all over the universe. One is going up and down, sometimes becoming a mouse, sometimes a tiger, and so on. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Ramanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach, Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 19.151. The living entities are promoted and degraded by the laws of nature. But if one is very, very fortunate by association with saintly persons, he gets the seed of devotional service, and his life becomes successful. Narad Muni wanted to bring Nalakuvara and Manigriva to the platform of devotional service through poverty, and thus he cursed them. Such is the mercy of a Vaishnava. Unless one is brought to the Vaishnava platform, one cannot be a good man. Right. So we see is that what's going on in all these different things. We see here is where within, you know, the various pastimes, and then so much of the time then these particular details will be there. Understanding the culture, the position, you know, all these aspects of sambandhyan, what are the proper aspects of applying Krishna consciousness, what's favorable, what's unfavorable, what's the ultimate goal. All these things. So depending upon where it is, something may be over, I say, something may be more, more emphasized, and sometimes something else may be. So the point is that what are the residents of Braj doing? Right? They're following their gurus. Right? They're always doing everything. They're never proud of what they're doing. Right? Because if you're assisting the guru, whose service is it? It's not ours. It's the guru's. Therefore, how can we be proud of what we do? Because it's not ours. You can't be proud of something you haven't done. Right? Unless you identify it with either yourself, which it's not, that's an illusion, or with the person that's there. You know what I'm saying? Like Hanuman, he's proud to be part of Ram's army and do some service for Ram. So it's Ram who gets the glory. You know? Does that make sense? So that kind of aspect. So when that's seen like that, then it works very nicely. So this pride comes when we think it's ours. It's mine. So therefore, now I can enjoy the results of my, you know, perfect work. But the point is we're serving Guru, and by the grace of Guru, we're able to apply ourselves. If we think, no, because of my material qualifications, but the point is one, the material qualifications come from Krishna anyway, but that we can use it in Krishna's service, and Krishna's accepting it from that platform, then that's special. Right? It's not because I'm materially qualified, that's why I'm a devotee. It never happens like that. It's only by grace of Guru. Therefore, came up the other day, causeless mercy. Technically, we're total materialists. What do we deserve being in Krishna conscious? We wonder, why is everything not going the way I want? What's actually going on? What's the reality? Like that. Are we actually asking a transcendental question? No. It leads to transcendental, you know, because the only real answer is transcendental. But since we don't know what's transcendental, how is our question transcendental? You understand? So it's still material, though we're doubtful in this, because before we were very confident that, yes, material life will make me happy. So therefore, when it's not, then I have a doubt. But I'm still just looking for a way to solve the material problem so my material things will go on nicely and I'll be happy. But, because that's all the better it can get in the material world, where you doubt the process of karma, jnana, or this, you know, yoga, whatever it is that you're doing, and you doubt if this is reality, that's the only time, that is the window to bring up transcendental knowledge. And that you can see what is actually going on. And then, you know, if we're inclined that that's the kind of answer we want, then we take it. And we get that faith, take up devotional service. If we're not, we'll hear that, and that's nice, and that's nice theory, but, you know, I have to be practical and just get back into the life. Or just take it how much it's interesting, or how much it reduces your difficulty, or, you know, like this. So then we'll take it up to there. Does that make sense? So once we get that, then there's every chance we may go away. That's why it's dangerous to stay on those first three levels of the neophyte position. Because gaining whatever it is that you want, one could go away. Once one comes to jnani, then it's about Krishna and that relationship with Krishna. So the tendency is to continue going, because you see there's more and more. Is that the sense? So therefore we can see is that we actually do take it up, that's causeless mercy. Because the devotee was a well-wisher. Because of that, then Krishna gives his mercy. Then things work very nicely. Not that, oh yes, I was so qualified, I was searching, I was a jnani, you know, none of this jigyasu, artarti stuff, you know, like that. You know, so, you know, I was, you know, a real searcher, but what's real in the material world? There isn't anything. So, if the smartas aren't real, then anything outside will, that is not going to be real. You know what I'm saying? They accept the shastras, they follow it to the letter. And that's still not enough, because it's the mentality. And then if we say, oh, we have the mentality, don't accept the Vedas, that's also a problem.
This particular point on material qualification comes from Krishna. So sometimes devotees also argue that even though I'm materially qualified, Krishna has rewarded those qualifications to me just because of my piety. Therefore,
just because of your piety will be. You have a karmic job working for a karmic multinational company. What is the question? So far we've gotten up to the material qualification we have, we shouldn't be proud of it because it's come from Krishna. But then taking it and reversing it for our own benefit, then we're saying because it is coming from Krishna and it's been given to me by Krishna, therefore I must be so much pious that therefore I have it. And therefore...
Yeah, therefore it is not that the entire credit, you know, has to be given to the Guru.
Oh, so not the entire credit has to be given to Guru.
Yeah, so
okay, because
like
Krishna gave it to me because I'm just so fabulous. Yes, but the point is what's been given to you, a material qualification. And only by the grace of Guru can you actually use it in spiritual life. Just like, let's say, okay, by my own piety, I have, you know, gotten the qualification of a very nice, large gauge, triple wire, copper, you know, cable, like that. You know, it means I'm top of the line. You know, none of this aluminum, you know, small little, you know, thread kind of thingies. You know, we're big, fat, copper, you know, triple, you know, nice. Whoa, are we good? But the point is if there's no electricity in it, it's absolutely useless. So all of your material qualification being applied up to coming in contact with Guru only would give you some material result. And so what is that doing? Keeping you in the material world. So it's not that much of a qualification. But once now the spiritual master is there and now it's being used for electricity, you know, carrying electricity, now it actually becomes of value. Otherwise before, it was absolutely useless. And you're saying that I got this because of piety, therefore I'm so fabulous. But who makes the laws of piety? Yeah, and you know, and so why would we be interested or not in following these things? Since we're a materialist anyway. It's just the modes of nature. So therefore the modes of nature should get the credit, not ourselves. You know what I'm saying? So you can always take it farther back. Because we always have to be there. Why are we so proud? You know, it's like in a prison, right? Let's say, you know, a prison, full-on prison. Criminals, you know, we're not talking about one of these white-collar places. You know, full-on high security?
Maximum security.
Huh?
Maximum security.
Maximum security prisons. Who's the most proud there?
The biggest criminal.
Yeah, but what means, but what's the qualification for being the biggest criminal?
He must have done big criminal activities.
Yes, but what has to happen in that really establishes your authority? word?
Dominating.
Dominating, but dominating to the point of what we're talking about in these verses. Right? Here, because they dominate so much, then what happens to the animals? Yes. So in other words, those criminals that have killed people are murderers. They're considered the, you know, that they're the top prisoners. They're the ones that run the place. They're the ones that have the most respect. You know what I'm saying? You know, you took a, you know, how you say, a box of bubble gum and got caught, you know, then you're on the bottom. Right? You know? That's that. You know what I'm saying? The point is that, you know, if you've murdered somebody, then you're on the top. But so within the prison, that's the status. But how does that status translate into, you know, the world outside of the prison? Right? Is that considered the best? Right? You know, we'd probably rather have the guy that was, you know, evading his taxes or something. You understand? So, the whole point is that we've defined that this qualification is the cat's meow, and therefore we're special, and therefore we should get credit. But that's credit within the prison house of Maya. How wonderful is that? Okay, I'm a big professional. I make, you know, $120,000, you know, like this and that, and so many things. But you're still just, you're just a big prisoner here, that's all. How is that a qualification? Why are we attached to that? Seeing that Kripila Muni then makes the point that if someone thinks that they're special because of their material qualification, that's devotional service in the mode of ignorance. And he even goes to, so far as to say one should not associate with such devotees. Even though they're devotees. You deal with them nicely, but you don't spend any quality time with them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so we have to understand there's a limit to all these things, but we're holding on, hope against hope, that there's something here for ourselves. So there is the point, is if the false ego is not there, you can be supportive. You know, if we go back to Mataji's question before, how do you deal with this? You know, these things. So as long as there's no false ego, like in the presentation she made, then you could use a strong, a soft presentation or encouraging presentation, and it should have an effect. How long it'll have an effect is another thing, but if one keeps doing devotional service, one will get purified, and that tendency towards ignorance or fear then will start to diminish, and then that problem will become less. But we see when there's false ego, then these things don't work because, as it said before, they don't care. They fail to see things as they are. Huh? Where is it? Where's the one before? It says he doesn't care. Yeah, it just means they just don't care. So unless you point things out very bluntly, then they'll go on in their ignorance. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So Maharaj?
Yes.
Can we say that all the questions of Maharaj Parikshit are transcendental questions?
Yes, because it's all in connection with how to understand things in the Krishna conscious perspective, whether it's you know, a direct activity or it's an indirect activity. But it's always about the devotional aspect. That's why it's Paramahamsa Samhita, because it is questions that the Paramahamsas will be interested in. So therefore, Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, these as you know, kind of that Puranic aspect, then they're all, these are perfect. You know, they're the best, the most best example. It's not that having that viewpoint that one gains from these three books, that you can look at all of the Shastras and see it from the same perspective. It's just you'll see that there's a lot more discussions of the secondary or the indirect aspects. But if you see everything connected to Krishna, you have no problem. But if you don't, and you read these, then you can get distracted.
When we talk about smartest, that they follow everything to the last letter, But they also, do they study the Vedas? Or they just...
Yes.
And they still don't see it because of their pride?
Their pride, but unless you're connected with the parampara, how you'll see. Because you're just studying words. But what the Shastra is it's the breathing of Krishna. So one can only understand the transcendental position of something if one appreciates the transcendental position of the Lord. Smartas, whether they're karmis or jnanis, don't accept the eternal form of the Lord. You know? So therefore they think Brahman is the top. You know? And even that, because it's a vacuum and this and that, so they don't even have a proper understanding of that. So on no way are they dealing on the transcendental platform. You know. Mm-hmm. But they may be more educated and more clued in than most. But at the same time, as they're so close, yet so far. You know, he probably gives the example of, there's one path between Krishna and hell. So it may be that those who follow nicely or this and that, the Vedic culture, but are not interested in Krishna consciousness, are closer to Krishna on the path, but they have their back turned to Krishna. Well, those then who may be from not as fortunate backgrounds may be farther away from Krishna on the path, but they're facing Krishna. So then, which way do you generally walk? Yeah, according to wherever your face is. So that means one is going towards Krishna, the other one will be going away. So it's just a matter of time. Okay. Because without the devotional qualities, how do you maintain? Right? Someone was poor, then you see good qualities. They maintain that through their life, you'll see that come out in the next life. But next life, are they going to remember they're poor? No, they've given so much in charity and all that, now they'll have money. They may have the nice qualities, but how long until that disappears? And then it goes back the other way. So without devotional service, how do you put things into proper perspective? So. So unless one is brought to the Vaishnava platform, one cannot be a good man. One may have some culture, one this and that, but underlying, why is he doing something? It's materialistic. So we take, oh no, if he has some culture, the veneer, it's good. But now let us say I have a solid, wood piece of furniture. Right? Some very high grade wood. Okay? Solid, well made, nice like that. Okay? Now I have a new piece of furniture that is an exact copy of it, but it's actually made with plywood, and on that plywood we put a veneer. A veneer means a very thin layer of the same wood. So when you look at it, it looks exactly the same. Okay. So now, if you don't know, then you might think it's a nice piece. You know, especially the price. The one's going to be very cheap, the other's going to be very expensive, you know. Especially since it's 150 years old, the other one, and this one's, brand new. Okay? So now, but the point is what's the concept of these kind of things? Right? Okay, they're practically used in that, but they're considered less value than the real thing. You understand? So why would we consider that a materialist who underneath, it's not good because it's all about themselves? But if there's a veneer of good behavior, why should we say they're better than devotees? Right? Why should we say that? Why should we say they're better than devotees? Right?
Cheating mentality.
Yes, cheating. Because it's just a veneer. As soon as you dig down a little bit, then what's underneath? Plywood, right? And they most likely are not even using waterproof plywood. So then it's going to fall apart. Does that make sense? I was going to say made in China, but the timing may not be very good. No. Yes.
Maharaj, this is a very crucial point you have mentioned, that the devotees have a tendency to appreciate the good quality, to appreciate all these nice qualities, polite and this and that, of the non-devotees, the Mayavadi people. And they look at the devotees, they see, oh, they are like so cold, they are this and that. And gradually what this tendency does, it makes them become more friends with the Mayavadis, and then...
Then they'll be distracted from devotional service. But because of pride, then they'll think that they're doing the real devotional service. Because the mistakes being made is that qualities are the real thing. No, devotional service to Krishna, that's the real thing. And now good qualities is naturally what you use in Krishna service, and good knowledge and skills. But so one's supposed to use those. So if you don't see, it just means that there needs to be more time doing devotional service. But that we're seeing it in that light means we're not having good qualities. Right? So why would we appreciate the karma's good qualities? Because they deal with us nicely. Not necessarily that we deal with them nicely. Or it's one of those things that I pat your back, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. So I'm nice to you, you're nice to me, and aren't we all so fabulous? You know, that's a very also common thing in your so-called culture society. But you bring in something that's not exactly the way they like it, and then you see how nice they are. You know what I'm saying? It's just a form. Anybody who's successful generally knows you have to deal nicely. You know, especially if it's the economic field. You know, you can also, if you're a politician, they know also you can do that. So the whole point is that it's not good. The point is that if that's there, now wouldn't it be nice if they were devotees? So then why aren't you preaching to them and making devotees? But we're not. We're leaving them as karmis because, you know, like that. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, to remain in the poverty-stricken condition is a kind of austerity. According to Vedic culture, therefore, the brahmanas, as a matter of routine, keep themselves in a poverty-stricken condition to save themselves from the false prestige of material opulence. False prestige due to advancement of material prosperity is a great impediment for spiritual emancipation. A poverty-stricken man cannot become unnaturally fat by eating more and more. And on account of not being able to eat more than he requires, his senses are not very turbulent. When the senses are not very turbulent, he cannot become violent. And so in this way, then that's why it has a benefit. So we'll look at it that poverty is not good. And so then, you know, from that thing, it's not, because it's how does it come about? By having bad qualities. Right? It's not because they had wealth, because they have bad qualities. Right? Wealth's not the problem. Position, all these different things aren't the problem, because they're opulences of Krishna. It's the false ego that comes by having them. Right? So then this is the correction. So then what happens is they develop good qualities. So being poor is not the important part. It's developing the qualities. So that means the qualities can be developed. But then how are they developed? You know, that they're real is only by devotional service. Because if for a materialist, it's just the modes of nature that manifest qualities and unmanifest them. But for the devotee, if he actually has good qualities, those are real. Right? So the point is if we're saying, oh, this devotee doesn't have nice qualities, because that's all he has, but because he is engaged in devotional service, then it's just a matter of time before all the qualities of the demigods manifest. But for the materialist, he has all these nice qualities. How long will they last? What is he doing to maintain them? Because unless he's following the Vedic culture and these things, how do you maintain? So it's just a matter of time before they change. Because if they stay in their own little environment, dealing with their own things in their own way that they feel they have control, they can manifest all the good qualities. But when it starts to go out of control, then you don't see the good qualities. You know, as you mentioned, is that people come to India, they think this place is crazy. Right? And the West, oh, it's so much more sophisticated and nice, right? But the problem is that in India, when something goes wrong, it's still the same crazy. Right? The lights go off. You're in the middle of the market. The lights go off. Does anything happen? No, people just stop and wait for the lights to go back on. And then they go about their business. So it's crazy, but that's all the crazy. What you see is the crazy. Right? But in the West, then it looks like it's all very sophisticated and nice, but if something goes wrong, like the lights go off, there's $1 billion in damage. And that was back in the, what is it, 70s or 90s? When it's the last, like, what happened in the 60s once, and it happened sometime later. Like that. With billions of damage, theft, you know, you name it, it goes on. Or in India, now you don't see it as much, but before it was very common. Petrol stations didn't have petrol. So you had to line up and all that. And people are lined up, 15, 20 cars, they get out of the cars, chat with everybody, get out their snacks, share their snacks, you know, and this whole thing like that. But in the West, they would get in there, they go like that. Everybody always thinks that what they got to do is more important. This guy got to get to the office, this one has to do this, the one has to take their daughter to the dentist. So they try to cut the line. And the others freak out, and it's a whole riot, guns come out, people get shot and die. You understand? That's the veneer we're talking about. So, you're looking at, you know, the devotee, and you're just seeing, you know, pine wood. But it's solid pine wood. Well, the other guy, it looks like it's oak, but it's only a veneer on cheap plywood. Does that make sense? And with time, everything will develop. Does that make sense? Yeah.
The Brahman is forcefully, you know, or voluntarily accepting.
Forcefully. Forces himself. You're going to be poor. No. Yes. You know.
He's accepting a poverty-stricken condition for the purpose of advancement. So can
purpose
you say,
of advancement, yes.
So can you say that amongst the four ashramas, the Brahman, Vanaprastha and the Sannyas are basically accepting...
Brahman, Vanaprastha and Sannyas.
Brahmachari.
Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, Sannyas.
Accept the Grihastha Ashram. Follow this particular principle.
Try and the Brahman in the Grihastha Ashram.
Yeah, and the Brahman in the Grihastha Ashram. Accept this particular principle.
Yes. It means it's just what's necessary. You don't try to get more than what's necessary. Hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, what is the duty of a Vaishya?
Cow protection.
Cow protection and this, that. But... now they have some cows, they have 10 cows now, and then you come back after them, they have, you know, 8 cows, and you come back a little bit later, and they have 6 cows.
More cows.
Yes. And how many cows should they try to get?
As many as...
that's the point. Unlimited. Right? But, having gotten that unlimited money, what are they supposed to do with it?
You're supposed to be giving charity.
Yeah, giving charity to the Brahmins, mm-hmm. take care of their people, their shudras, yes, like that, pay their taxes to the government, mm-hmm. and then whatever's left, hari bol, buy yourself a yacht. You know?
For the cows.
Yeah, big one for the cows. You know, take the cows out on the Caribbean tour.
That's how you can justify that.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to go, I say, you know, you know, I heard the grass is really good in, what is it, San Martinique or something like that. And so, like that. But actually, we found Puerto Rico was a little bit better. But, you know. Yes. So, it's just what's required. Kshatriya, how much do they tax and duties and tolls do they collect? Do they just go up to a point and stop?
Yeah.
No, they keep going. Because if they get more, they can give it in charity, do all kinds of nice public works, everything like that. Means they may, once they get up to a certain level, start to lower the taxes and stuff. But the point is then they have, so, like that. Okay. Shudra by nature, how much do they want? Yes, exactly. Like that. Like I said, I saw this decal on this car in Vrindavan, and it said, "All I want is everything." So only the Brahman, just how much is required, that's all he keeps. But depending upon the Brahman, he has more or less. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's individual. So whatever works for their service, their things like that, they don't keep more than that. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's what's done. So that's the whole point. You know, and then that will be, you know, in the context of the Grihastha ashram. Right? The Brahmacharya Vanaprastha Nyas will keep it in even just how much, because they don't have to worry about all the social stuff. Right? Now, let's say you have a lady in the Vanaprastha ashram. If every time there's a festival she shows up in the same sari, is anybody going to complain?
Mm-hmm.
No. But if the Grihastha lady shows up in the same sari,
yes,
there's a problem. Right? So that means you have your special sari. How often can you wear it?
Once,
unless you go to a different place, right? In other words, you know, or it has to be a lot of years difference that everyone will forget about it. So you have to judge the whole thing, right? So that means some of these good saris you may only wear 2-3 times. But why do you have them? Because there's the potential you could wear them. Right? And so what does that mean? That means every festival you need a new sari.
Yes.
Of course. You understand? So that's how it works. So then you see what is the group you move in, the thing and that, then how much that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So if you can get away with wearing it once every 2 years, you do that. Someone else once every 5 years. Someone else once. You know, unless it's a new place. Okay, we're going to, you know, some other country, you know, then we can wear it. Oh, you know, be invited to a friend's wedding in Malaysia. And nobody from Mayapur is going. Okay, I can wear it. You know, great. You know, oh, but why are you going? I mean, it's right in the middle. You're so busy, and you say, "No, I get to wear that sari." Yeah, of course, I'm going. Right? You understand? So that's the whole thing: is you have to see what works for you. You know, so it will be different. You know, that's the whole thing. You know, just like for the lady, it may be 500 saris, it may be 250, it may be 125, it may be 60, it may be 30, 25, you know, like that. You come down. You know, the man, you know, 12 sets of clothes, or 10 sets, or 8 sets, or 5 sets, you know, like that. So, you work it out. Did I get the proportion right? Yeah.
On the accessories.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. Hmm? Sure. Yeah. Yeah, no, we're not getting into that. And then we have what matches. Right? Okay. Right? So it's according to the conditioning, the nature of the situation we're in, then how much you deal with that. And the point is that the Brahman is comfortable with that. So even if others, you know, think less, they don't care. Because they're just doing to serve Krishna. Because Krishna is happy to see you made the endeavor to, you know, be clean, dress nicely, come behave nicely. That pleases Krishna. Krishna's not going, "Hey, didn't you wear that sari, you know, 2 years ago?" You know, he's not doing that. Okay. So therefore, then by not having much, you can't overdo things with the senses. Because of that, the senses become more peaceful. More peaceful, then you're less violent. Therefore, then there's less pride.
Mm-hmm. We say that this progress is very individual. Because usually devotees tend to be a bit extreme. First on one side, and then they go to opposite of this. And then with the years, they kind of find the middle path.
Yeah, so that's just practice. You find, the point is you're dealing with your situation how it is now. And you try to apply it to the best of your, you know, ability and realization. And then you'll start to see, like you said, too much this way, too much that way, until you finally figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You finally get your wardrobe to work, but you're already now 50 or 60. Like that. You know? And it would have, that arrangement would have looked really good when you were younger, but you only figured out, you know, it's just like the kind of the, there's kind of a running kind of a joke or understanding about linen. You know, it's something that you figure out, this is good, this is the most comfortable, you know, only when you're in your 50s or 60s. You know, so they're the only ones, though it's the nicest, they're the ones that wear it. But it just took him a whole lifetime to figure that out. Yes. Okay. So the whole idea is that, therefore, if you just eat what's Krishna Prasad, right, then that's already going to reduce down the turbulent senses. You're going to be regulated, you're going to eat Prasad. So therefore, eating at regular times, eating only how much you need, eating only that which is offered to Krishna, all that will reduce the difficulty of the senses. That will reduce the violence. Right? So why are we focusing on his senses are not turbulent? When his senses are not turbulent, he cannot become violent. What's the underlying principle that we're dealing with here?
Ahimsa.
But we see as sensual turbulence and you know, violence.
Steadiness.
But there's something else. The primordial.
We are not trying to overlord anyone.
Yes, yes. So that's one of the things. We're not trying to overlord. And then if you don't overlord, then you're not trying to
become
Krishna, not trying to enjoy. So therefore, to control and enjoy. So by regulating the senses, not eating more than required, then you control the I am the enjoyer. And when that's there, then less the I am the controller. Because what's the point of being controller? Because I can enjoy. So if you reduce the need for enjoyment, you reduce the need for I'm the controller. Right? Does that make sense? Then on that, it has all those nice things that you said. You become regulated. You don't try to control. You become steady. You're non-violent. All these different things. But they're coming because you're reducing the desire for control and enjoy. And why would you do that? To please Krishna. So the materialist may do it for their own purpose, or might be forced into doing it by the modes of nature. But the devotee is doing it because it pleases Krishna. So therefore then this reducing of the I am the controller and I am the enjoyer, you know, gets rid of I and mine. So I is the false ego. We saw the problem. Because turbulent senses will become the violence. That means that is the position of I. So I have the false ego, I'm the controller, therefore I can do whatever I like, if it's good for me. Like that, how I identify yourself. Then at that point, one's become too much on that side, you know, of the false identity, which is means you're the farthest away from Krishna. Therefore then, the material nature puts you into a situation where it reduces that. Not because you want to reduce it, but by force. And so the materialist just keeps going up and down with this. Having a mentality that's more useful in Krishna consciousness. So they're moving up in the cycle. And where their consciousness is going away from Krishna, you're increasing the I and mine, and it's taking you away. Right? So you can understand as the material world's working for that purpose of reducing I and mine, and I am Krishna, and everything, you know, belongs to Krishna. So therefore I engage everything, and I am servant of Krishna, so therefore I engage everything in Krishna's service. Right? If it's mine, I engage it in my service. If it's Krishna, I engage it in Krishna's service. So, if I'm the center of things, then it's all about me. If Krishna is the center, then it's all about him. So that's what the material world's doing. There isn't anything else. So this whole idea is that we're going to use modern false ego, modern identities, to improve our devotional service. And that doesn't sound very good. That's like bringing in cats to help you raise your mice. You know? It's not good. It sounds good, because the more you increase the false ego, the more you increase I and mine, the more you increase that drive and passion, it'll be considered a success in the material world. Right? Only the Vedas will consider this other as the top. Right? In the modern culture, if someone's religious, someone's renounced, things like that, you know, it's okay. But it's not mainstream. But it's okay, we'll respect it. You know, they want to do that, that's, you know, they do that, but don't expect we're going to do that. You know, and when we're feeling bad, we might come for some advice, but when we're feeling good, we don't want to hear it. But also, only the Vedic culture then puts those who have this understanding of reducing the material control and enjoyment, and that's actually a superior position. Only the Vedic culture does that. No other culture does that. Right? Like we said, who's the head of the culture in Japan? Right? Samurai. Who's under them? Priests. Right? So they'll always put priests generally above others, but it's there. In the West, then the kings before. Right? And then, even if they were rich, it didn't work out, that they still didn't have their position. You know, and then the bourgeois rose up, and then, you know, then if you had money, now that's the more important thing. So, does that make sense? It's like, how many heads of state in the world? Right? So many. But why, let's say, like the Sultan of Brunei, or these guys, why do we notice them? Because Brunei, who's ever heard of Brunei? Right? Where is Brunei? Right? Like that. You know, it's somewhere out there in Oceania. You know? Does that make sense? But because he's so rich. He's a billionaire. Oh, then we're interested in that he's the head of a country. Who cares? You know? Pol Pot was the head of a country. Right? Who cares? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. So it just comes out, we take it that these things are the you know, so it's a bourgeois culture. So if you have money, therefore then, and you can use that money to advantage, then you're on the top of society. Right? So the businessmen control the countries, that, you know, and everything else. So it's fine like that. The education, the hospitals, the everything. So it's all money. It's not about, you know, understand? So only the Vedic culture then puts the Brahminical culture on the top. Yes. And the aspect of renunciation is higher than karma. Jnana is higher than karma. Right? Does that make sense? So you're trying to reduce that false ego. You're trying to reduce that sense of enjoyment. In his Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, "This pastime represents the pride and arrogance coming from feeling that one has an aristocratic birth and is wealthy. It gives rise to cruelty to animals, lust for women, and indulgence in alcohol." Right, so alcohol also means any type of intoxication. Because in the Vedic, you just take alcohol, and then, you know, because that you can make out of anything, right? The other things, you have to go searching for them, right? Everywhere in the world has alcohol, but if you want certain drugs, only a particular place in the planet has it, right? You know, so it's the common thing, it's the intoxication. But along with that, pride is actually intoxication. You understand? It all goes together. So being overly pride, criticizing others, and that, it's the same thing. "These further give rise to debauchery of the tongue, uncontrolled eating habits, and loose talking." Right? Because for them, being demigods, they're not killing animals. But if this mentality continues, their piety runs out when they come down to the earthly realm, then they're going to be inclined to kill animals. So then you have uncontrolled eating habits and loose talking. Then come general hard-heartedness, shamelessness, and all sorts of disgraceful activities. They all just follow one another. So this pride then becomes the root cause of everything else. So that false ego, that's why we see, is when Krishna glanced at the universe, then along with the jiva's time comes false ego. Right? Does that make sense? Because by time you can do things. By false ego you identify so you can take part in them. And what's going to be all these activities for? Who are they pleasing? Us, the jivas. So you have a complete package. So you see, it's all based on false ego. The creation happens by false ego. You add false ego, pradhan turns into mahat. You add it again, then it turns into ether. You add false ego again, it turns into air. More false ego, it turns into fire. Like this, you just keep adding. So the gross is the most false ego. That's why what we can see is the gross thing, that's considered more connected with false ego than subtle things. Somebody may be a gentleman, that's a nice thing. It can be, you know, it's but they have a huge house, fancy car, good suit. That's what's going to be the real prestige. You understand? Because there's more false ego. So that's why then that is the big enemy. Right? So this false ego and lust. So these are the two problems.
They go together.
Yeah, lust and anger go together. Okay, so we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nityananda Gaura Prema.